Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes behind some of our favorite video games. I'm Caleb.
And I'm Shivneet.
Today, we are going to start talking about the complex, deep, and wonderful lore of the Borderlands universe. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, my name is Shivneet, obviously, and I may not be what you guys are used to, if anybody's listening to the Lore Party. So I'm from the Esports Business Podcast, which is owned by TopScore Solutions. So TopScore Solutions is a company originally started by my co-host, Ben. And he originally started the company as a consulting company. But given what esports is right now and the youth of it, we switched our direction to more content creation, interviews, kind of. Instead of consulting, we've done a lot. We've tried to hit all the other ends of esports, you know, sports management and just sort of everything else that esports has to offer. Specifically, what I work with is I'm a co-host of the Esports Business Podcast. Our small blurb is that we connect the principles of business and sports management to the esports industry. And essentially what that means is we interview companies, startups, we interview people that have started certain initiatives in esports. Like one of our earlier guests was Dr. Krejay, and he's essentially working with youth, and he's doing video game based learning, and he's trying to put esports initiatives on the like maybe middle school and high school level for kids and making esports more normalized. Whereas a lot of people growing up playing video games, like myself and a lot of people listening to this, maybe their parents were always like, oh, you'll never get anything out of video games, like being invested heavily in video games, blah, 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 blah. Like you've heard it all before. But I think now more than ever, we're at the state where esports has a legitimate career, and we try to expose our listeners to that. So we kind of put businesses on the forefront. We give them a platform with the Esports Business Podcast, and we try to, you know, challenge them a little bit on what their company does in esports, their involvement, and kind of their journey.
Yeah, so it's kind of like esports as a rising industry, kind of putting it in a position where people who may not have noticed it or taken it seriously can do so.
Oh, for sure. So yeah, specifically in terms of the podcast, definitely we've had a wider range of guests, and it's definitely exposing people to the esports industry, not just as something that's like hype filled, but it's like this is something that's gonna stay for a very long time. Given the amount of investment. I mean, esports is projected as a whole to be like a multi-billion dollar industry very soon, given Overwatch League, given League of Legends, given Fortnite. I mean, we can go on and on and on. The esports industry has given a lot of notoriety towards a lot of jobs that other companies have already sort of set in. Esports industry needs accountants, they need data analysts, they need managers, they need CEOs, they need all of this stuff just like any other industry. And I think what our podcast seeks to do is just kind of expose all of that to everybody and understand where a lot of these people are coming from and why they've decided to pursue esports.
With all of that going on, like it definitely like sounds like you and your team are just really passionate about the games that you play and the games that you watch and these worlds that these developers are constantly like creating and maintaining. And I think that's what's really interesting about Borderlands, the game we're discussing today, is Borderlands has a lot of those like business realities and those infrastructures kind of built into it.
Oh, for sure. If we're talking about Borderlands, right, it's not necessarily an esport, and I don't, you know, with the upcoming game, I mean, that's not all we do, right? We also try to look at business aspects of video games, and I think with Borderlands, as the lore and as the setting goes, it has a lot of moving parts, and I think a lot of the major companies that we'll probably touch upon today, like Atlus, Hyperion, Dahl, they definitely follow, like, basic business principles and traditions, and like that's relevant in any sort of game.
A big part of the reason why I like Borderlands as a universe is exactly like you said, the fact that it's such a persistent universe where the actions of individuals and larger factions do have lasting effects as the series goes on. And so like to reiterate stuff like that, like we've got Atlus, we've got Dahl, and we've got Hyperion, and those are three major organizations that interact with each other in just, like, such interesting ways to, like, go over, like, the basic histories of these companies in-universe. Atlus was the company in the Borderlands universe, discovered a vault of like ancient alien tech on a planet called, what is it, Promethea?
Promethea, yeah. They sort of were the forefront, right? I mean, if we're going to get into it, they kind of did all the exploration. And in some parts, they got lucky. And I think in business, you know, a lot of people get lucky in business. Sometimes you're developing a product or whatever, or something happens, and it's kind of like just luck kind of plays its way in. And I think Atlus, like I said, got lucky discovering the early sort of Iridian tech or alien technology, and they just kind of integrated it. They integrated into their company at a very, very early level, which sort of set them above and beyond all the competition, right?
Compare that to like other corporations in the Borderlands universe. Eventually, Dahl decides to join the fight, and Dahl starts looking for alien technology on other planets, including, most notably, Pandora, which is the setting for the majority of Borderlands stories up until this point. So Dahl kind of joined in on this gold rush with all these other companies, with Hyperion, with Tedior, with Jacobs, Malawan, all of them trying to find these alien Iridian tech.
Well, they're all trying to, yeah, you say gold rush, and I think that's a really good term to use, right? Because mm-hmm. I think when we talk about it, I think early on, Atlus was one of the people that they kind of just focused on their own, Promethea. And then when we get into Dahl, they went on to Pandora after, I believe, Atlus pulled out with the Crimson Lance and everything. Like I said, if we're comparing it to video game companies now, I'd compare them to Microsoft, right? Because Microsoft was one of the very early adapters of online play. I believe the original Xbox had like Xbox Gold and stuff, versus when the Xbox came out, there was the PlayStation 2, there was just the Nintendo GameCube, and that was almost exclusively LAN, right? And when you look at Dahl, they brought a lot of infrastructure to Pandora. They brought mining companies. Like, I mean, they were a mining company originally, but they mined, like, they brought mining rigs, they bought settlements, they had labor that was convicts, right? They had essentially free or like very low paid labor, and they brought a lot of settlement onto Pandora very early on. And I think that's one of the cool things that you can draw comparisons to. I mean, as Microsoft as a whole, but like specifically Xbox and their line of gaming, they brought a lot of online infrastructure. I mean, they kind of showed people like this is what gaming should be eventually.
A little bit more of that too, like starts tying back into how Dahl comes in. Dahl started doing that, but then Dahl ended up leaving Pandora because they weren't able to find the vault, which actually ends up setting the stage for a lot of the Borderlands story as we know it. Because the majority of the psychos and mercenaries and bandits that we find were originally Dahl or Atlus employees who were brought to the planet as a convict laborers.
I mean, that's why a lot of the weapons you get, right, when you kill, I mean, just as like a gameplay thing, but like when you go to these old mining stations and stuff, a lot of the weapons that the bandits drop, quote unquote, like, unsurprisingly, they're Dahl. Like, and even in the loot boxes that they store around the area, it's a lot of them are Dahl specific loot boxes. I think Borderlands 2 has the green Dahl loot boxes, right? And those are all Dahl. Like, Dahl's influence on Pandora, from my perspective, is one of the most, is the most story impacting.
Right? Absolutely.
And I think that's where you get to like look at why everything is the way it is, and that's when you start playing as Roland, Lilith, and all of the, in the original Borderlands character.
Dahl Corporation ultimately left, and that's what set the stage for a lot of the world of Borderlands.
Yeah, what Pandora is, what we see of Pandora in the both of the Borderlands universes is a result of Dahl's actions on Pandora, right? They weren't necessarily looking for the vault originally, right? They went on as to harvest resources, to harvest what can Pandora bring the most out of, and their heavy investment in this planet that's very harsh environment, right? Like, the equivalent would be us trying to go to Mars, like humans trying to go to Mars to like mine resources. But as we know, Mars is a very harsh planet. There's no water, or very little water. There's obviously no like life on there. And I think what Dahl's intention was originally was to get a bunch of resources, and they sort of covertly were looking for a vault hidden on Pandora, right, with Dr. Tanis. I believe she was one of the main, and we get to see a lot of Tanis' character in 1 and 2, but she was one of the main driving forces behind the Vault Key, and she eventually finds a piece of the Vault Key, correct?
Yeah, and like as Borderlands goes on, she eventually finds the, with the aid of the Vault Hunters, assembles the Vault Key. So like in the light of all this like gold rush, she ultimately ends up using this Vault Key to open the vault and finds it doesn't contain alien weapons, unless tentacles attached to an alien count as weapons. And so it contains a weaponized alien.
Yeah, a weaponized alien. There we go. That's what I would call it. And that eventually the Vault Hunters have to fight off. And that sort of domino effects and triggers everything else, right? In Borderlands 2 and the pre-sequel and Tales from the Borderlands as well, right? That sort of domino effects everything. Kickstarts like, oh, there's other vaults. And each of the vaults have like specified certain like monsters, and like the main vault in Borderlands 2, I believe, is called the Warrior, right? The creature behind that.
And it definitely like gets even more like stiff as far as just like the way the companies interact with each other and the way they're just interacting with these vaults as it goes on. Because then that's when we get into Hyperion starts entering the game a little bit more seriously. Now, Hyperion had actually been, unbeknownst to possibly even them, pulling a lot of the strings from even early on. Because even as a low-level programmer, Handsome Jack was actually, or the man who would become Handsome Jack, was actually pulling a lot more strings than anyone realized. Because he was the father of a siren, and the siren gave him kind of a insider info into where this vault was. He guided the Vault Hunters to open the original, the Vault of the Destroyer. After the Vault of the Destroyer opened is when Iridium started appearing en masse across the planet, which is where Hyperion got power. Jack then basically sent Hyperion to mine the Iridium, which turned out to be incredibly valuable. And they used the Iridium to power, to repower Tanis' Vault Key.
Yeah, I think the cool thing is now that we're getting into Hyperion, the whole Iridium E-Tech is super cool, right? Like, from my knowledge, Hyperion essentially licensed Iridium and E-Tech to Malawan and a lot of the smaller gun companies that we see. And I think that's one of those cool moments where you see like a business principle kind of being applied, right? Like licensing in Pandora sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like in terms of how lawless it is, but Hyperion has such a strong iron grip on the Iridium tech that they are able to essentially say, if you want to use our tech, you're going to have to charge you, and all profits you get on this tech, we're going to take a percentage because we are Hyperion. And if you dare try using this technology, we'll crush you.
And that's what's interesting, seeing some of those aspects get played out.
Well, when you look at it, you would think that why doesn't Hyperion just sell their own E-Tech weapons? Well, they did, but they understood as a company, right, like basic principles going, business principles going through, that your reach is better when you collaborate with smaller companies that can spread your tech and spread, you know, what Hyperion does while also profiting off of them. Hyperion doesn't necessarily want to be involved in Pandora's quote unquote underground market or some of the lower level markets. They just don't have the damn time, right? I mean, they're creating robots, they're creating claptrap units, and they're doing all this crazy stuff, and they're trying to harness the power of Iridium tech. Why not just have smaller businesses spread your stuff while also making money off of them? And if you can't make money off of them, just crush them.
So I guess the ultimate question is, like, do you feel like the companies in Borderlands, do you feel like they just have interesting parallels to how companies might interact with the real world? Or do you feel like what we see in Borderlands is how, in a world similar to Borderlands, how companies would act? Like, do you see a lot of realism in there, or like more just interesting parallels?
I think when you're speaking specifically for the Borderlands universe, I think you can only really truly try to draw parallels, right? I mean, the realism, you can reach and you can say that this is how it works. And I think other than like very, very basic kind of business practices, I mean, if you want to keep going deeper and deeper into what the real world is, you find it that Pandora follows less and less of that track.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, yeah, Pandora has an economy. They have a currency. But, I mean, people steal and loot all the time. And it's just kind of like, that's not really what happens in the real world. I mean, circulation through guns. I mean, we have a company, right? Marcus Ammunitions. Their whole MO is taking guns that are already have been sold and sort of just reselling it. Right? We don't have any companies that sort of just resell stuff that people have already made.
And I think the other interesting thing that is interesting to follow, though, as far as just the parallels between how the Borderlands companies work and how real-world companies work, is also some of the this whole branding thing that a lot of the companies do.
Definitely, right? All of their, I mean, going back to the Marcus Ammunitions thing, like I believe every time you buy a gun from that little the little box or whatever, the vending machine, he always quotes like some company's motto or branding, right? It's like, if you want to stay accurate and you never want to reload, you know, buy like a so-and-so. If you want to do this, blah, 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 blah. And I think Doll has their branding with the signature green. I think they've really cornered, it's really weird talking about it, but like they've sort of cornered the color green in all of their guns. And you look at Hyperion, they have the revive stations. Right? Doll also, I believe, developed the HUD that Borderlands people use right now. Like your in-game HUD, Doll actually develops it.
Doll is the people who kind of formed and created Echo and the EchoNet and all things related to Echoes.
And if that isn't branding to its best, then I don't know what is, right? If that isn't advertising to its best, seeing your health and seeing your, I mean, if we're looking at it, not just from a gamer looking at your screen, but I'm assuming Lilith, Roland, and all of them see their HUD, they see their shield, they see their health, they see their gun ammo and everything. If that's not marketing done right, then I don't, you know, that's advertising. Constantly seeing the reminder of everything and notice that it's Doll, that's just marketing and advertising and branding done best. And Hyperion does it with their revive stations and their technology and their e-tech. I think you touch up on a really good point.
And then we see that too with just the unique niches that the other companies try and meet. Like the smaller weapon companies like do try to fill their niches. Like Malawan has kind of an artistic vibe to it, and Vladoff has kind of a revolutionary vibe to it. And obviously, like, we could go on about the mechanical and functional differences between these weapons, but like the artistic differences alone just lead to just this really interesting perspective of the way that business works in the Borderlands universe to whatever
degree. Oh, yeah, for sure. Stylistically, right? I mean, you touched up on two. Jacobs is sort of like the Wild West kind of, you know, like they're sort of, they're nitty gritty. I mean, you have like all these other sort of, I don't know if Bandit, quote unquote, is necessarily a gun company, but Bandit is sort of like high, they're nuanced by like high magazine size, high damage, kind of like just crazy designs on the guns. And then, I mean, if we're definitely talking about branding and individual gun companies, I have to mention Torg, right? Mr. Torg as just like macho man Randy Savage pretty much is who he is. Yeah. Right? If any of us a little bit older, if they watched WWE back in the day, hopefully you guys know that. If you don't, then I suggest looking that up. But yeah, he's essentially done solo branding for Torg company, right? He is both the CEO and the face of the company, which is really rare, right? I mean, if you look at Apple, right? Steve Jobs was sort of the face, and he did a lot of the work. He did some of the work in terms of the business aspect, but I think Wozniak was really the, like, as people would say, Wozniak was the brains behind Apple, and he did a lot of the tech. That's how it kind of works in a lot of companies.
Yeah, and you definitely see, like, different aspects of that with a lot of the way the weapons interact. What it leads to is a universe that, even though it's not always entirely point for point accurate about the way that companies and corporate branding interact, it actually does serve as like I said, these interesting parallels, these interesting similarities in how much the companies and their actions alone make this universe so much more complex. You know, gives it this sense that like every little logo you see has a story behind it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you go through playing the game, every little Echo recorder you pick up has some sort of story, right? And if you look at just any of the stations, any of the settlements, I mean, you can look at. If you explore hard enough, you'll see doll signature on some stuff.
And so just having that much detail and that much thickness and like how these worlds got built and having that this much background in how these companies that like you hear their name a lot, but you only see their involvement in like indirect ways. You see the results of their actions more than you see their actions, which I think like leads to this interesting richness of the world. It almost reminds me of like a corporate Lord of the Rings, where like Lord of the Rings has this sense of like history behind it.
Yeah, it's chaotic structure, right? Like that's what comes to mind. As chaotic as the Borderlands universe is, it's also very structured in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, it's structured, but like Lord of the Rings has this world where everything that you see, it just has this like rich history behind it. Like every town and every like, and so like Lord of the Rings is like shown as being the result of this long-standing history that you only ever get hints of as you pass by a set of ruins. And that's a little bit of what Borderlands is, almost like a corporate version of that. You're not passing by these like ancient stone ruins of a once great Dwarven Empire. You're passing through these ruins of these like once great mining towns and companies, and how everything is, this whole world is built on the ruins of another.
Hey, it's Abu, executive producer of Lore Party. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, maybe take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.